Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode of Bullshit Break was brought to you by you, the fans. That's right. For the price of a beer or a price of a coffee, you can support this stupid podcast called Bullshit Breakaway and support Greg and I. It's awesome. Thank you. Today, we're going to talk about Malkin and if he should become a Ranger. We're going to talk about Patrick Kane and if he should become a Ranger. And we're going to have Vincent Mercogliano on to talk about, you're never going to believe it, the New York Rangers. Without further ado, here's Mark Messier. Transition.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Messier, and you're listening to Blue Shirts Breakaway, the number one Rangers podcast.
Hey, Blue Shirts Breakaway fans. Welcome to another week of the Blue Shirts Breakaway. I am your host, Ryan Mead, and I'm here with my co-host, Greg Kaplan. Greg, say hello.
This one, for some reason, it feels like we haven't done one in a while.
It does feel like
it's been the exact amount of time that we've always have done one.
A lot's happened. The draft happened. The Rangers participated.
They sure did.
I would say that they made picks for players. And I know you're thinking, Ryan and Greg, you're the number one New York Rangers podcast. You're going to break down those picks? We are not. Not our job. And then there's been also, I don't know if you've heard of this team called the Chicago Blackhawks. I don't know if they're really a team anymore.
Pretty sure they're fucking up my life, Ryan, is what they're doing. I hate it. I really hate it. I think we got to get it out of the way early.
The Kane stuff?
I really do. Kane stuff. Let's just get ahead of it.
I want to get into the Malkin stuff because that's juicy for Ryan. Daddy likes.
That's fun. Let's have the not fun off the front here.
Okay, let's have the not fun.
So, do you want to do the hockey perspective or the life perspective first?
I think the life perspective is pretty simple.
A terrible human being.
Yep. Okay. I was going to say it a little bit more nuanced.
You slice it, listen, I understand that sports fans, you and me included, we do this for players we like. Perfect example, because someone will be like, oh, you don't actually have an example. Like, no human being conflicts me more in my entire life than Jose Reyes, because there is a certain level of, I grew up with that guy. I grew up loving that guy. He is such an important part of so many formative years in my life where he gave me happy memories. And it's really hard to separate the fact that there was a domestic assault incident in Hawaii where he threw his wife through a glass door. And it's really hard for me to play both ends of that side, right? Because you can't.
But well, he did throw his wife through a glass door. It's pretty hard to fight that. Yes.
Exactly. That is a certifiable fact. But I can't look at Jose Reyes and not think about all the happy memories I had with him from like 2004 until 2011. That was a really important part of my Mets fandom, my like culmination of a certain period of my life. Like 2006 is such an important year for me as a sports fan, and it's impossible to separate Jose Reyes from that, from the just shit person it turned out that he ended up being. And it's unfortunate, and I am not downplaying my own personal struggle with it because, again, so many more people have so many more opinions, more deserving than I do on the topic. But that's just a personal example from me. For Patrick Kane, I'll be quite honest with you, Ryan. It's a complete level of selfishness. I just don't want to deal with the bullshit. I don't want to. I don't want to have the conversations. But here's the thing. The conversations are too important not to have. So we will have to have them. He is a bad person. He has done things to people that are unforgivable under any circumstance. And I don't give a shit if charges were dropped or there was a civil settlement or any of that shit. All right? We're living through Deshaun Watson. Can't talk to me about any of it right now. So I don't want the person.
I don't want to deal with it either. I think that's pretty clear. If he was a Ranger and he scored some big goals, I'd be excited. I understand that. But even from like a hockey perspective, which I know we're going to get into in just a second, it's not really the fit the Rangers are looking for. It's not really.
Because he can't play center. He ain't a center. I get it.
Can't play center. Elite winger.
There's a certain point that people are making that's true, and its points come from everywhere, right? So it's not that the Rangers can't use his 5-on-5 offense, which is still very good. It's not that the Rangers can't use his 70-plus points, which surely will help them. It's not like we just went through an entire season where we talked about how the one thing plaguing the New York Rangers is that they can't score in 5-on-5. And if you're just talking about the player, yeah, Patrick Kane should help with that. That's what logic says. However, if you get Patrick Kane, that's your move. That's it, right? Everything else is kind of bargain bin shopping. You're getting – and to be fair, the Rangers – maybe that's what they should be. One big move, bargain bin shopping, backup goalie. That's it. Great and good. However, I feel like a couple things that people aren't taking into consideration. One, yes, Filipetl just had an absolutely incredible playoff. A playoff so good in which you and I had a discussion about whether he or Mika Zibanejad was actually their playoff MVP if we were to take
it. Legitimate discussion.
Out of the question. Legitimate. We weren't doing it for clicks.
Not a
bit. We weren't doing it Larry Brooks style, right?
I cannot wait to talk about that tweet.
I'm so excited. But that was a serious conversation we had. Filipetl was that good and that important to the New York Rangers, where you could have made an argument that he was the team MVP in the playoffs. Full fact. However, he's yet to do it over an 82-game season. He's also yet to play a full 82-game season. Every year, he's either gotten hurt or something has happened to him that has taken him out of the lineup. That's just a stone hard fact. And if you don't address your center depth, yeah, you can have Patrick Kane and Artemi Panarin on the line. Are you prepared for Barclay Goodrow to be between them? And are you prepared for Kevin Rooney to be between one of Alexei Lafreniere and Kaapo Kakko and Vitali Kravtsov? Like, that's your center depth. You have none if you sign Patrick Kane. I get it, guys. It's very easy to fall in love with the points. It's very easy to fall in love with the idea. It's very easy to fall in love with the wing concepts that the Rangers have. To me, that's all great and good until someone gets hurt down the middle. Zibanejad has injury history. Hedl has injury history. And if those are your only two certifiable, bona fide top six centers that you could possibly play, man, you are so close to having Barclay Goodrow and Filip Hedl being your only two centers, or Mika Zibanejad and Barclay Goodrow being your only two centers. And that's unacceptable for me. I'm not okay with that. To me, that's like, that's like the Mets having a chance to trade for a star pitcher from one of these shit teams. Like, I don't even know. But instead of the Mets addressing the two lineup holes that they have, a designated hitter and catcher, they're just going to be like, you know what we're going to do? We're just going to get more pitching. We're going to get so much pitching that hopefully our lineup doesn't matter. And at some point, here's the thing, Ryan, it fucking matters. Doesn't matter. Matt Scherzer last week, six shutout innings, struck out 11. You know what the Mets did?
Lost. Lost, my friend. They lost.
Oh, my God. It's just like, yeah, guys, if I'm just talking about the player, I love the points. I think it'll help the 5-on-5 offense.
If you were
but
like,
if I'm talking about lineup construction, I can't get over the fact that the New York Rangers are a not out of the realm of possibility injury away from either Zibanejad or Hedl from having to play Barclay Goodrow 17 minutes a night.
What the fuck? I don't even think we've gotten to the really important parts of Patrick Kane yet, which is, well, we have. I'm sorry. The first points we made were the really important parts. Now, we have to trade for Patrick Kane, and guess what? The Blackhawks have to eat half of his salary. That has to happen, otherwise he doesn't fit on the New York Rangers cap. So not only are you giving up assets, now, after seeing what the Blackhawks have traded other players for, their DeBrincat, their Alex trade, DeBrincat.
DeBrincat and Kirby Tack. So I'll to that point,
those trades are miserable.
Awful. So I can't sit here and say, well, it'll be different if they have to eat salary. We have no reason to believe that it won't. They're literally letting Dylan Strome walk for free.
We have to talk about Dylan Strome as well, because that's a legitimate option for the New York Rangers.
Yeah, I wish we could, Ryan. I really wish I could sit here and say the cost would be prohibitive to trade for Patrick Kane. I think the reason why this conversation, we're even having it, is because the Blackhawks fumbled so fucking bad on draft night and everything after draft night that I could sit here and I honestly think Lundqvist, a first, and a conditional pick that could also be a first, that honestly could be it. It really could. They have given us zero reason to believe they will get a haul for Patrick Kane. And then you add into the fact that Kane is essentially going to choose his destination, a la Rick Nash, forget about it. The Rangers aren't going to give anything up in terms of tangible asset that's going to make you or me worried. Kako's not on the table.
Definitely not.
Lafreniere is not on the table. It's literally Lundqvist and two picks. And I think that's enough. And I think that's enough because that's how bad the Blackhawks have been for the last 7 days. They've been awful.
The tanking for a top two pick in the next draft, which I know they're almost guaranteed to get one of the two generational players, and these are generational prospects. It's not like a making up term. These are the kind of prospects. This is sort of the McDavid Eichel draft again with Bedard and Michkov, I think is his name. I want to make sure. I don't know. Anyway, he's the Russian prospect.
For you, it's close enough.
Yep. He signed until like 2027 or some shit. Anyway, they clearly are betting it all on getting Bedard. And they think that will change their future. I don't know. They still have Seth Jones for 8 more years. And 8 plus 2022 is 2030. So, I can't even think about 2030.
But the thing that the Blackhawks are doing that other teams aren't, right? Because there are other teams also trying to strategically not be overly competitive to get a chance at Bedard. But the Blackhawks are making it so that they're making sure they're not even accidentally acquiring pieces that could help them.
Yeah, they don't want to do that. They want to be very, very, very bad.
Right. They didn't get – I understand that they got – a top 10 pick for DeBrincat, but they didn't get another player from Ottawa. Not even one of their not quite top three, but maybe that like 4 to 8 range prospect you would expect.
Such a steal for Ottawa. Such a fucking steal.
But here's the thing. I said this on Twitter. I still don't quite think if I'm Ottawa that I should have been in the position to make this big of a swing. Like, I guess if the price is so low, it's a no-lose proposition, right?
Yeah, you're trying to extend
now,
them. Of course.
But that's the thing. Would I feel sure that Brady Tkachuk and Alex DeBrincat are going to be my guys for the next 7+ years? Or is Alex DeBrincat more of the really, really, really good third banana, but maybe not the third banana I want to be paying that much money to, right? Like, is he more Chris Kreider than he is the player?
You're Ottawa. Ottawa.
I guess that's true, and you have to get who you can get. I understand that. Yeah. At the same time, no, but like the point of this is, if we thought that it was going to be cost prohibitive to get Ottawa, not Ottawa, Chicago, to eat half of Kane's money, it's just out the window. It really is. They have no interest in trying to recoup even 80 cents on the dollar.
But even then, like, let's say they ate half of it. It's like, okay, you bring Kane in, and you put him on the first power play in the Strome spot. It's like, okay.
It does seem like a waste, right? Because
we're going to limit Lafreniere again? Because you think Kane's not going to play power play one? He's definitely playing power play one.
But the point you're really making here is that like the difference between Kane being on that line and anyone else being on that line, it's like Kane adds maybe what? 5%. The level of success of that line just baked into Fox, Panarin, Zibanejad, and Kreider is so high that it like adding someone as offensively gifted as Kane doesn't, it's just like a waste of a space. And then you can't make the argument, well, then they should just actually make a second power play unit that they care about. We know they won't. So why am I even going to entertain that as a realistic opportunity? They're not going to, nor should they, Ryan. Here's the thing. Their power play is dynamic when you give 90 seconds of the 120 seconds.
And guess what? It won the whole fucking season for them. Yeah. Like, that was the
and
whole
you know
plan.
What? It's going to next year. For me, it honestly, from just a player personnel standpoint, you're just leaving yourself so barren down the middle if you don't bring in a center. And you cannot do both. If you want Kane, even at 50%, you are admitting that at least for the first 60% of the season until the trade deadline, that you are stuck with what you have at center. And you know what, Ryan? It might be enough because it was enough last year, right? If Igor Shesterkin is Igor Shesterkin, and if that top power play unit is that top power play unit, that might be enough to get you to the trade deadline where you're third or fourth in the Metro and you have a realistic possibility of going up the standings and being a playoff team once again. But I am not willing to bet this season on simply being decent enough at the start and hoping they figure it out at the end.
What?
I'd rather have a more concrete answer before this year starts. And that involves bringing in a high-performing center that could play top 6 minutes in case someone gets injured or in case Phil Heedle continues to not exactly be that guy.
Malkin. It's a perfect scenario.
It's interesting. The Malkin stuff is really interesting.
You know how Stassi's your guy? I get it. Yeah. And you planted your flag. Malkin's my dude. I'm all in.
Yeah. If your guy seems more fun than my guy, which doesn't seem right.
Yes, I agree with you. Malkin, listen, guys. Lifelong Penguin. Generational winner there. Just a pain in the ass. Not healthy. But a lot of people have been throwing this not healthy, doesn't play a lot of games. Dude, he's played like more than 60 games like twice in his whole like career. Going back to like 2013, games played 31, 60, 69, 57, 62, 78. That 78 year, he used to hit 98 points. Malkin's legitimate, and he's pissed off at the Penguins, who were acquired by Fenway Sports Group. Sports Group, yeah, who own Liverpool and the Boston Red Sox, who definitely had a number that we're not willing to go past. Whatever that number is, we don't know. But they're not treating him like the Malkin he wants to be treated like, which is a Pittsburgh Penguin legend. They don't give a shit. They've never given a shit. They let Mookie Betts get traded. They've done this with player after player in Liverpool. They will find a way to replace you. That's what Fenway Sports Group does. But when it comes to getting treated like a superstar and getting treated like a great player, you know what the Rangers do very well? Just that. Now, maybe he turned down a 4-year offer from the Pittsburgh Penguins. He might have found it insulting. After they handed Chris Letang a contract until he's a literal dinosaur. I mean, he's 41 in the last year of that contract. It's a 6-year contract for Chris Letang. And that's no slight at Chris Letang. He's a great player. But Malkin is exactly what the New York Rangers need. I would take him on a 3-year deal. I'm sure they're going to offer him a 3-year deal. They can offer him like 6.5. They can offer him 6. I think he'd be happy to take something like that. If I'm Malkin, I might take a 1-year fuck you deal. Like, you don't want me, Pittsburgh Penguins? Fine, I'll take a 1-year with the New York Rangers or the Colorado Avalanche. Think about taking a 1-year with the Colorado Avalanche for Malkin. That's disgusting. And that's why the Rangers need to get in there now. He's the perfect piece where he could play 3C if he's like on this fire or whatever. He's just having a great run here. Malkin could go down to the third line. It's totally fine. We could run 3 lines. Malkin could play 2C. He's injured. Not a problem. Have Hedl step up and be 2C. You have that depth. He's a proven playoff player. He's a pain in the ass. He's an all-time player. He's everything the Rangers need, and he's center depth, and you don't have to trade anything for him. You lose no assets, and all you got to do is take a meeting where James Dolan goes, here's a bucket of cash, and we're going to treat you like gold. That's it. That's it. Why wouldn't? And I'm shocked. I really am, Greg, and tell me why. I'm shocked as to how many Ranger fans are not interested in signing Malkin. Like, dude, I understand he's a little hurt. But it's Malkin. You're not going to get a better 2C for a 2-year deal than that. There's no better option. Maybe Pierre-Luc Dubois. Maybe. But even then, I'd rather have Malkin. If you're like in a vacuum for 2 years, I'll take Malkin. That's the way it goes.
I will say, I talked to our friend Murata Tesh today a lot, just because.
How's Murata doing?
He's doing great. That guy just.
Love him. So nice.
Gem of the earth, truly. He's very confident that Winnipeg is not going to trade Pierre-Luc Dubois. He thinks they will spend the next, at least this season, really trying to sell Dubois on the Jets and really trying to keep the Jets winning. Because, and Murat's right to this point too, if they do decide to sell him, the package they could get today is the exact same they'll get at the deadline. Exact same. You lose nothing by trying to run out there for 4 months and prove to Pierre-Luc Dubois that you're taking hockey seriously and this team is going to be good. You lose nothing. You'll get every single asset you want at the trade deadline that you could get today. And quite honestly, you could probably have more teams involved because players will get hurt, and that involves long-term IR in situations that we're not thinking. And as I'm saying this, if he ends up in Tampa Bay, I'll murder someone. Yeah. Anyway, back
yes,
to Evgeny
will.
Malkin. Yeah, back to Evgeny Malkin. It's a little shocking that more Ranger fans aren't at least pondering the idea of what Malkin would look like in a Ranger sweater. And the point I think you made that to me means the most, it's pissed off Malkin. I would
point
die.
To prove.
Yeah. But not just point to prove. You have the opportunity that only 7 other teams in the NHL have. And that's, you're pissed at the Penguins, want a chance to really shove it down their fucking throat Why don't you come to this Metropolitan Division rival where we also, by the way, just beat you in the playoffs and you can beat them yourself next year, man. Do you want that chance? Only seven teams have that opportunity. Ain't going to be the Hurricanes. They're cheap as shit. Ain't going to be the Capitals. They're desperate to get a goalie. It seems like that's where their money's going. Ain't going to be the Blue Jackets. They're a little too far away. Ain't going to be the Flyers. They're fucking idiots.
Definitely not the Devils.
So it essentially comes
the
down
Devils,
to...
The Devils, by the way.
I don't know, man. The Devils might do something nuts. Like, I could see the Devils being like, here's 2 years, $11 million.
Well, I'm just laughing that they passed on Shane Wright, but that's another story.
Oh, God. A good friend of the show, Jeff Belinsky, was actually thrilled with the player they got. And I'm like, you're lying to yourself.
You're lying.
Stop lying to yourself.
You're lying. Don't stop. Oh, that's who you wanted? Cool.
I've never seen a draft go better for the New York Rangers in which they didn't have a pick. You're telling me the Devils had a chance to draft Shane Wright and didn't. The Islanders traded away their first-round pick for a defenseman I had no fears whatsoever about. The Flyers, everything the Flyers have done so far, just chef's kiss. Keep up the good work.
I'm absolutely not a podcaster, by the way, Greg. Just wanted to let you know. It's a quote of mine.
Why? Who said that?
No, it's just another quote from a Flyer player. He said he used a different word than podcaster, but I just wanted to.
Oh. Yeah. Ha!
Yeah.
Oh, so. Yeah. Fucking. Yeah, I don't know. I just, 3 years would give me a little pause. I won't lie to you. I'd be a lot happier. Like, if I had to choose between... If I had to choose between giving up assets to pay Patrick Kane $5.5 million or just backing up the truck and paying Malkin $7.5 million for 1 year to have him just go apeshit in Pittsburgh, I'd rather that. If we can make it a 2 year deal, it's absolute perfection. I like a third year with a player like Malkin, I don't say no. I'm just telling you that it doesn't sit right with me. It's like, essentially, the Chris Kreider extension, right? Where, like, you understand why it's 6 years, but you really would have preferred four. And it's the price of doing business to a certain extent. If it takes 3 years to get Malkin, I'd consider it. Let me put it this way, Ryan. Under no circumstance is 5 years of Strom or Kopp better than 3 years of Malkin.
The Strom, and we're going to have Vince on in a second. And I know what he's going to say, that the doors aren't closed on Kopp and Strom. But I would say the doors are mostly closed. It's just not locked yet. The door's closed. Just the locks aren't on. The latch hasn't been turned. 6 years for Kopp is insanity. And I like Kopp. Crazy. There's no way. So I'm all in on the Malkin train. Because if Pierre-Luc Dubois isn't an option, you need a center option. And that's either Stastny or Malkin. Or maybe a name we haven't talked about yet, someone they're looking to trade for. And it's definitely not Larkin or one of these big names, by the way. Dylan Strome could be the answer. And going from Ryan to Dylan is as Rangers as it gets. Like, it doesn't get much more New York Rangers than that. So we'll see on that one. But I'm all in on Malkin.
Let me give this hypothetical for you. If Malkin asks for four, and that's the only way to get the deal done, do you do it?
So I'm worried about that because he would be 40 at the end. He turns 36 on July 31st, so he'll be 36 heading into the season. Super happy going to age 39 with Malkin. Cool with it. I think his performance is... I know he's going to be hurt. I know he's going to miss 30 games. I'm going to live with that. I've got Igor. I get it. I can't really go four. But if you're pissed off and you're motivated enough... Because no one else is going to go four either, by the way. Not anybody. Not any team that you want to be on, Malkin. I promise. You're not going to get four from the Colorado Avalanche. You're not getting four from the Florida Panthers. You can get three from us. That's it. You think he gets 4 years from the Panthers? No way.
I don't know. My worry is it has to be financial, right? It has to be something like the Penguins just weren't offering him north of $5 million.
Oh, no, I think it started off as financial, and then it became, like, blood. Like, disrespect.
Right, no, but, like, if we're talking this out and we're saying what made this go sour, right? If they were close on the money, I don't think the years would have actually mattered as much. So that's what leaves me to believe that this was mostly financial, which makes it personal, right?
Yep.
Especially when you see Letang get that little extra that he
Dude,
was
Malkin
asking for.
Commented, I hope I don't have to play against you on Instagram. That's real drama, my friend. That's real shit.
So if it's financial and Malkin is cool doing short term, which is 2-3 years, then you can start really talking yourself into this being a viable option for the Rangers. And I'll also, like, sitting here, I'd rather have to give Malkin an extra year and make it 4 than even get Kopp or Strom to concede to the Rangers and accept 4. Like, if I had to choose between Malkin, Kopp, and Strom over each, like, I get one of those guys for the next 4 years, I'm choosing Malkin.
It's not close for me.
Well, because part of it for me is we've kind of seen what the ceiling is for a Strom and or Kopp top six, right? Like, last year was great. None of us have any complaints. It exceeded our expectations.
Awesome. Fun time.
But we also can't sit here and say, well, I think it could actually get better than it was. Like, as great as it was, I think you have to consider yourself quite lucky that you should have gotten through the Penguins with ease. But there is a level of luck that you fell behind 3-1 and you won. I think we have to admit that there was a level of luck that they got the Hurricanes when they got the Hurricanes. And I think you have to admit that the right team did win the Eastern Conference Finals, even if it wasn't the team that was up 2-0 and 2-0 in Game 3. Like, play that series out 100 times. I don't think the Rangers find themselves in the specific situation they were in often, and I think more than 65% of the time they lose the series. So to me, that kind of signifies that all those things considered, that might be the ceiling for that specific group of Rangers. Now, if I were to add a little, you don't have to add a lot, right? You're just missing a couple ingredients here. And I think Malkin, along with improvements from Lafreniere, improvements from Kako, and someone like Kravtsov getting minutes
Sammy
that were
Blay.
Going.
Woo! Yeah.
But you're getting minutes from Sammy Blay and Vitaly Kravtsov that were going to, in the top 9, to Dryden Hunt and Barclay Goodrow. And you're replacing those minutes with minutes for other people, which also makes your fourth line better, by the way. Asking Dryden Hunt to play the role that he best succeeds at on the fourth line, that's great. Asking Barclay Goodrow to be a defensive specialist, that's great. By adding someone up top, you're making the lineup deeper below him. And to me, I just think instead of trying to run it back, like, I understand the risks that come with potentially mixing some things up, but I think we saw the ceiling. And I think the Rangers have to go out and get someone down the middle. I want to be clear that to me, it has to be a center that can push them over the top. And I think you're right. I think Malkin is that guy. I think Stastny does a lot of things well that the Rangers would benefit from. And I think something Stastny would offer that Malkin doesn't is if the Rangers did want to bring in a guy now, but also have the option to bring guys in at the deadline, then Stastny more better.
Nice.
Better fits that agenda. But if you – like, some guys you just have to go for. And I don't think you're going to get – a more motivated or more pissed off Evgeny Malkin, and you have a real chance to tell the Penguins to go fuck themselves.
It's perfect.
And I just don't know.
Have to do
I don't know how, as a sports fan, you don't revel. It's all the shit that we've had to listen to from fucking Pittsburgh media.
I couldn't believe that goddamn JFresh chart that had Pittsburgh like 20. I was like, what? They're the most annoying fan base I've ever seen. It's all fucking. They're
you
worse
guys
than
are
Toronto.
Tell me, you've had to eat this shit sandwich for weeks, even months at this point. Like, the sun rose in Pittsburgh today, so I promise you that fucking loser on the radio was like, well, Jacob Trouba's still alive, so my
okay, whatever.
Blah, blah, blah. Telling me as a fan base, that you don't want to be the team that then brings in Malkin, gives them quadruple birds, and tells them to get fucked, and then beats them in the playoffs again with their own fucking guy? It's shit. You know what? Here's the thing. Malkin, a little bit of a dirty piece of shit.
He is.
What if he's the one that hits Crosby next year? You kidding? Holy fuck. I would be naked in a minute if Malkin did something that took Crosby out of his... I'm not rooting for it. I'm not rooting for injuries.
Not rooting for it, but... Just saying.
Twisted things make people horny. That's all I know. And that would turn me fucking on.
Blue Shirts Breakaway, everybody. Let's get to Vincent Recogano, esteemed journalist. Transition. Hey, we're back with our first guest. We have Vince Recogliano. Vince, welcome back to the show. I want to start with a real hard question. Last year on the show, you came on and said about Libor Hayek, I don't know what they're doing. Before the show, he signed a one-year, one-way deal with the New York Rangers. Please explain and help me.
Ryan, I knew you were going to start with this question. Like, I was thinking about it earlier when I was driving home from the rink, and I remember that I told you guys I would do this, and I'm like, they're totally going to ask about Hayek. Because I think you led with that. I don't know if it was the last time I was on, but it was definitely one of the times that I came on. I remember you guys, like, I was all ready to talk about all this training camp stuff, I think it was, and you guys led with Hayek. So I anticipated it this time. I'm ready for it.
Good. Help me. Help me understand.
But I still don't really have an answer for
you. Okay, fine.
I guess I'll say that. I will say this, like, all jokes aside, I have learned this about Chris Drury, that no matter how insignificant some people might think an asset is, he does not like to waste an asset. And whether it's Hayek, or I also was having a conversation with somebody today about Julian Gauthier, like, those guys are not going to play for the Rangers next year unless, you know, there's a variety of injuries and a lot of crazy stuff happens. But I believe that they are still holding both of them with the hope, as much of a long shot as it might be, that maybe somebody will come along and offer them a late round draft pick, and they'd rather do that than just let them walk away for nothing. So I know it seems silly, especially when it costs guys that are probably higher upside, more deserving, whatever you want to say, a roster spot, as we kind of think that it did, especially with Hayek last year. But he just doesn't want to let those guys walk for nothing. He wants to hold them and see if he can, whether add them to another package or just on their own, maybe fish a sixth or seventh round draft pick. And I'll say this, Alexander Georgiev definitely has more value than those guys. But I was of the impression, and I had heard this around the league from a variety of people, that he was going to have a really hard time getting anything other than a late round pick, like maybe a fifth or sixth round pick for him. And then he pulls out 2/3 and a fifth. So sometimes, you know, he can make you kind of eat your words on these things. Now, is he going to get a package like that for Hayek? No, but
Vince, I'll stop the podcast.
I'll come back on if that happens and we can reevaluate. But I mean, you know, maybe he gets a sixth round pick from somebody for those guys. And I would throw Gauthier in with Hayek, because Gauthier is a guy that I know they have no intention of actually using in NHL games unless, again, a variety of things happen that open up a lineup spot. But they didn't want to let him walk. They were going to qualify him as well, just because they view him as a fringe asset that maybe some way, somehow down the line, they could get a little something for.
And I promise this is not a defense of Libor Hayek or anything like that, but allow me, Vince, to at least present an opportunity that makes a little sense from the Rangers' perspective, right? Ryan, are under the impression it'll be one of Nils Lundqvist or Zach Jones, depending on everything that happens this offseason, that will be given shot number one at bottom pairing left-hand defenseman. And we assume that Patrick Nemeth will probably not be a New York Ranger come opening night. So you could at least make
He might not be one in like 24 hours, yeah.
Right. But at least you could say that if you keep Hayek, you don't have to give out the obligatory $925,000 contract to veteran defenseman X, who is just going to sit in the press box as a seventh defenseman. And why can't that just be Libor Hayek, right? Because if something happens to the top six, whichever of Jones or Lundqvist or Robertson doesn't win the job out of camp, probably getting the first crack at that anyway. So why not just already have your seventh defenseman box checked, call it a day, move on, do something else more fun?
That's fair. I mean, that's feasible. I can't believe we're spending 5 minutes opening the show on Hayek.
This is what our listeners care about, Vince.
Vince, just
that's
you wait until what the
idea
next...
Heard.
Don't, you know what? Fine. Here's what the next 5 minutes we're going to be spent. There are a lot of interesting players today who were not qualified contracts by their organizations. Is it too soon for us to be thinking of the welcome back and man rocket Brett Howden narrative that's going to start on opening night?
Yeah, but I thought I saw somebody, maybe it was Drager, tweet that he was pretty confident that Howden was going to get a deal to re-sign with Vegas. Did I making that up?
Nope. You did see that, but that's not as fun, Vince. That's not what we're here to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, they kind of need a fourth line center, so maybe Brett would be an option. I like Brett. I wouldn't mind seeing Brett back over here. But
the jokes would be incredible, Vince. It would be all-timer stuff. Let's get to the real news, I guess. Malkin will be testing free agency. We spent the first 30 minutes talking about Malkin on this podcast. Do you see any scenario where the Rangers go out and are a finalist in signing Malkin? Because obviously this comes down to Strome and Kopp. We'll get to them eventually. But Malkin is probably one of the hotter names on the center market, and it clearly fits a need the Rangers have right now.
Yeah, he fits a need, and if you could get him at your price point, then sure, he would make a lot of sense. That goes for a lot of guys. That goes for Kadri. That goes for Vincent Trocheck. That absolutely still goes for Andrew Kopp and Ryan Strome. But I feel like I've written about this ad nauseum in the last couple months. But no matter what they do at that center spot, you have to look at it from a realistic standpoint. And the reality is, no matter which way you want to slice it or what you want to play with on cap friendly, the Rangers have extremely limited cap space as it currently stands. My projection, I've been putting this number out there repeatedly right now, is $8.5 million, because you could fudge it and make it look a little bit bigger, you know, make it look like $10 or $11 million. But the reality is that whether it's Vitali Kratsov or Johnny Brodzinski or Dryden Hunt or one of the prospects that we're looking at right now, like Will Cooley or Brennan Othman, the Rangers are going to need a few of those guys penciled in on the roster to fill out the bottom spots. So I have added, anticipating at least two or three guys with those, let's call them sub-million-dollar contracts, on the books, on the roster. They really only have like three or four spots to play with. One of them is Kaapo Kakko. One of them is a backup goalie. And then you've got like two spots. You know, one of them has to be a center, and then there's kind of a wild card spot that, depending on how much they spend on center, could be maybe a free agent. Like, I know they for sure would like to bring Tyler Mott back, or if they end up spending on the higher end for a center, it's probably going to have to be another one of those sub-million-dollar kind of contract guys. Now, buying out Patrick Nemeth, which I think is a real possibility in the next 24 hours, or probably less, I guess, by the time this podcast comes out, that would free up roughly, kind of like, if you look at it, $500,000 is the way I would look at it, because he makes 2.5, but the buyout would save them 1.5, and then you have to replace him with somebody. So if you bring up whether it's Jones or Lundqvist, that's basically $1 million. So all you're really saving with the buyout of him is $500,000.
You really think there's no way to trade him though, Vince, right? Like, I don't want to cut you off, but no trades are going to be happening with him.
They tried at the draft and it didn't happen. So they would have had to do what they did with Mark Stahl and attach an asset to him to convince another team to take him. It wasn't like they were going to trade Nemeth and say, okay, we'll take a sixth round pick back. They were going to have to say, we'll give you Nemeth and we'll give you, let's call it a second or a third round pick, in order to say, for another team to say, okay, we'll take him, which is what they did with Mark Stahl with Detroit a couple of years ago. I don't know if they had a taker for that or if Drury just didn't want to sacrifice the draft pick to do it. And the buyout, you know, can make some sense, especially when you look at the cap hit next year. There would be no cap penalty for the buyout next year, which is going to be an even tighter cap crunch for them. So I do think the buyout makes some sense, and I do think that there's a very real chance that that's going to happen. But again, if you figure you have to replace him with somebody, which you do, then you're really only saving about $500,000, $600,000. So maybe that pushes their available cap space up to about $9 million or so. But with that $9 million, you have to re-sign Kakko, you have to find a backup goalie, and you have to decide what you're going to do at center. So if you do the math, you can come to a pretty reasonable conclusion that a guy like Kadri, who we're expecting to cost $8 million or so a year, or Malkin, who his price point is a little more up in the air. He made $9.5 million this year. We know Pittsburgh, or we've heard that Pittsburgh offered him, I think, $5 million, and he said no to that. So you have to figure he's going to cost more than five. How much is he going to cost? The Rangers, as far as I can tell, really can't afford to go much above six, and their preference is to keep it as close to five as possible. So Malkin, to me, while you could say there's a fit, it would be nice to have him on a short-term deal. We know they don't want to give out long-term deals. That was the big holdup with Strom. But is he going to come $6 million or less? I think that's a huge question mark right now. I'm really curious to see how the market materializes, because how many teams are really willing to pay top dollar for centers? And then how quickly do those chairs get filled? Kadri, we know, is probably the number one guy out there. Teams are definitely going to be fishing around on Malkin. What's going to happen with Kopp? What's going to happen with Strom? What's going to happen with Trocheck? Those are kind of the five, I would say, premium centers on the free agent market right now. So if four of those guys get signed and then one guy is hanging around late and maybe the Rangers can convince him to come in at a number that starts with a five, well, then they become a more realistic option for them. But if all those guys are out there fishing for $6 million, if not more, I think it's going to be really tough for the Rangers to squeeze that. So maybe I'm looking at this from too much of a numbers standpoint as far as the cap is concerned, but everyone that I've talked to has been giving me the same impression for really a year now, and that's that the Rangers are in a tight situation, and they're not going to be able to go out and sign big, impactful kind of guys on the free agent market for at least a couple of years.
Vince, I think the next thing we need to ask you about before – we're going to ask you about two wingers, but first we're going to ask you a winger about who is currently a New York Ranger, and that's Kako. It seems as though it's an inevitability he's going to sign a 2x2-ish, probably like 2.2. Is there any reason for any consternation that a deal of that magnitude has not been announced yet, or is it just there's no real rush, so why rush?
I don't think there's a real rush right now. I think ideally you'd like to get it done before Wednesday at noon. I don't sense that there's a lot of concern about the offer sheet possibility, but if you can rule out that possibility, why not do it? So I certainly would not be surprised if we hear the deal announced before Wednesday at noon or some point on Wednesday. I've been hearing for a while that they pretty much have the framework in place. For the Rangers, the two-year bridge deal makes the most sense. They don't want to do a one-year deal because that would mean that you're going to have to go through negotiations again with him next year while you're simultaneously having to negotiate with Lafreniere and Miller, maybe Hedl. So I think next year they're already going to be overloaded with kids who need new contracts. They don't want Kako to be one of them. The two-year deal makes the most sense for them. I've heard that it sounds like Kako is willing to do that. And I've heard from multiple people for quite a while now that the framework is the Philip Hedl deal, which was 2 years at $2.3 million per season. Now, will he get that exact number? I'm sure his side is trying to push a little bit more. And I know the Rangers, because of how tight the salary cap situation is, feel that every couple hundred thousand that they can save is a pretty big deal for them. So I think right now it's probably fluctuating, the negotiations between $2 million and maybe, let's say, 2.5. They're probably going to land somewhere in that range is what I've been told and what I've been hearing for a while. I just think the Rangers are probably trying to squeeze as much out of it as they can at this point. But I do think they're close. I haven't had any indications that they're not. And I would expect it, whether it's in the next day or two or a little further down the line, to be announced at some point. I will be clear, because I had a lot of people ask me this when I tweeted about this last week, that does not necessarily mean the Rangers would not discuss a trade with Kako. I think if they weren't willing to discuss trades with Kako, he wouldn't have been scratched in game six of the Eastern Conference Final. So I don't look at him as an untouchable guy. I do look at him as a guy that you have to get a really nice center in return to think about trading. I absolutely do believe that at this moment he's in their plans for next season, especially when you look at their right wing depth chart, which doesn't have a whole lot in it right now with Frank Vetrano and Andrew Kopp heading toward free agency. So my expectation is that Kako will be signed and will likely be on the team next year, but I wouldn't sit here and absolutely rule out a trade possibility either. The deal is kind of notwithstanding of that. Regardless of whether they're going to trade him or not, it's important that they get him under contract.
And that brings us to Patrick Kane, which I would, just guessing on the narrative you've taken so far in this episode, is even if the Blackhawks are eating that money, half of it, it's still going to be an exceptionally tough price figure for the Rangers to fit in. And that's before we talk about what it would cost to trade for Patrick Kane. Though I do think part of the reason why these at least theories and conversations have increased is because, quite frankly, the Blackhawks had a really bad week. And it seems as though they are not getting what people thought they would get for the players they are shopping. Do you get a sense that Kane is becoming more realistic, or is this more just scuttlebutt you're hearing from people like myself, Ryan, and others on Twitter?
And Chicago radio insiders, of course, Greg.
And Chicago radio insiders.
Yeah, to me, it's been more of an internet rumor. It's not something that has come up in any conversation that I've had. So I look at it as a long shot. In an ideal circumstance, could you add a guy like that to a contending team and think that he might help you get over the top? Sure, but this isn't an average circumstance because of the flat cap era. You heard Chris Drury in the one chat that he had in Montreal. The first thing he brought up about his conversations with other GMs is everybody complaining about the salary cap. So given that reality, there's no way that the Rangers can really afford to be chasing high-priced wingers. And if you were to acquire him at even 50% retained, and nobody has told me, or I haven't seen any hard evidence that the Blackhawks would even be willing to retain 50%, unless you're giving them a really substantial package, you would have to think that a guy like Kako or Hedl would have to be at the top of that deal on top of draft picks and other stuff. I just don't see why they would go chasing a winger when they know that 5.25 that he would hypothetically cost in a 50% retained scenario is the exact money that you need to sign a center. And center is a glaring weakness on this roster, whereas winger is a position that you've been drafting guys for in the first round for years now. So you can go at the last five drafts, their first pick in each of those drafts has been a winger. So they are well stocked at winger. They have Artemi Panarin. They have Chris Kreider. They have Lafreniere. You know, you guys know the names. I don't have to go through all the names, but they are well stocked at winger. They need centers. And I absolutely believe that Chris Drury, whether it's one of those five big names that we talked about, whether it's a trade for one of the big names like Miller or Scheifele or Dubois, or which I think is also a realistic possibility, it ends up being maybe a B-level guy who comes a little bit cheaper.
Say his name, Vince.
Sorry?
Say his name. I know you want to say his name.
Dylan Strome.
I know. I'll let you say it, Greg. I know. I've seen you.
Oh, Paul Stastny. Nice.
Yeah.
I think he's
a real possibility for them. I really do.
Vince, I just want you to know how excited I get when his name appears in your column. That it's just everything I've ever needed and more.
Either him or a guy like him who you won't have to commit to long-term, who would come cheap enough. Like if you sign him, then you can go and bring Tyler Mott back, or you can go pursue a bottom six piece who you think is going to be really helpful for the lineup. Now, is that going to be the sexiest move? No. Is that going to put the Rangers over the top? Maybe not. But the reality of the Rangers situation, and I know I keep being Captain Reality here, but if the Rangers are going to win a Stanley Cup, it's not going to be about one move that they make this offseason. It's going to be about Lafreniere and Kako and Igor and Keandre Miller and Braden Schneider and Philip Hedl or whoever, any of the young emerging players on this roster, even guys like Brennan Hoffman and Will Cooley or Zach Jones, whoever's coming up. It's going to be about the growth of those guys. It's going to be about those guys along with the core that you have right now of Panarin and Zibanejad and Fox. It's going to be about those guys stepping up, becoming, if not star-level players, then high-performing, high-quality players. And that is the path to a championship for this team because the core is locked up. I've written about this before. I've called them the Essential Six. Panarin, Trouba, Mika, Fox, Igor, and Kreider. Those six account for over 60% of their available salary cap space. They've made their bed with those guys. They all have either complete no move clauses or partial no move clauses. None of them are going anywhere right now. That's the core of this team. And to bolster that core, what they need more than anything, more than one move that we can say is going to happen this summer, is they need the young guys to continue to grow and to become top six guys when it comes to the forwards, top four guys when it comes to the defensemen, and bolster this roster and make this roster complete. Because I just don't believe that whether it's re-signing Copp or Strome or going after one of these other centers that we've talked about, certain guys to varying levels will make the roster slightly better. But ultimately, the collection of young talent getting better is what they need more than anything. So, you know, I know it's the offseason, and of course, like, I'm super interested in what they're going to do too. And Drury, as far as I can tell, has been calling about absolutely everybody. I do think he's checking in on all options. He's just super diligent that way. But predicting their next move is really tough because of the salary cap, because of all the moving parts, and because of the fact that it's just – he is, let's say, very tight-lipped about letting it be known which way he's leaning in a lot of these situations.
So let's talk about Strome and Copp, just get out of the way. You've been reporting that they really weren't close, but the door's not totally closed. I think that's mostly because they want long-term contracts, and we've talked about the salary and the availability of money for the New York Rangers over the next couple of years. And I'd imagine both of them want five-plus years. Is that sort of the case right now? It's not only just the years, but it's also the average money, average amount per year that they want. But it's mostly years.
I think the holdup. So I've told you guys this before. I think in the winter, the Rangers made a push to try to extend Strome. I think there was a moment in time where they were like, "Listen, when it comes to value, cost, knowing what we have, the way that he fits in the locker room, all the factors, we're not going to be able to do much better than him at that price point." So they decided, let's go for it. Let's see if we can lock him up to an extension now before he hits the market. I know that they were talking numbers between $5 and $5.5 million per season, which has been the number that we've talked about with all these guys. Again, that is their goal, is to be between $5 and $5.5 million. I don't think Strome was opposed to one of those numbers. Obviously his preference was going to be 5.5 on in that range. But my feeling on it is that he wanted security of more years than the Rangers were willing to go. And that's when negotiations broke down. And that's why at this point it seems unlikely that he's going to come back. Copp, I think, is similar in a lot of ways as far as the money and the years are concerned. Now, when he was with Winnipeg, I heard that he was looking for a deal from them at a $5 million per year range, which the Rangers, I think, if he were willing to do that, would jump on it. But he came to the Rangers. He was like a point per game player for them. He played consistently in the top six. He boosted his value in his time in New York. So now that price, from everything that I've heard, has gone up to the point where I think he's looking for probably at least 5.5, if not closer to 6. So it's all kind of this moving parts game for the Rangers. And I think, again, like I mentioned earlier, it'll come down whether or not they can bring back either of them or one of the key free agents on the market. And again, I think Kadri, Malkin, and Trocheck would probably be the guys that would be on the higher end of the spectrum. It's going to come down to, do any of them land at a point where they're not getting the full dollar amount or the full year amount that they're looking for from another team, and they're willing to maybe come back and meet the Rangers in the middle? That, I think, is the most realistic path. So I think what you might see is maybe Wednesday the Rangers don't necessarily sign somebody right off the bat, but maybe by Thursday or Friday one of those players is looking around. A lot of the spots on other teams have been filled. They're not getting quite the offers that they were hoping that they would get, and then maybe that's an opportunity for the Rangers to swoop in. But I just don't see the Rangers coming right off the bat and offering a huge contract to one of those guys for all the reasons that we've talked.
I don't get the Kadri thing at all, Vince. I think he's going to get 7 years somewhere. Or 6 years.
I get the Kadri thing just from the pot. Again, it's something we've said multiple times. It benefits agents to make other teams think the Rangers are involved in certain players just because they are the New York Rangers.
And yeah, to me, I think that is part of it for sure, Greg. Mm-hmm. I also think that in an ideal world where cap space wasn't an issue, he would be the perfect fit that the Rangers want, because he's a guy who, you know, can play on the second line. He proved it on a championship team. He became a big point producer this past season, and he plays with that edge and that two-way commitment and that speed and all that stuff that the Rangers love. So he's exactly the kind of player they want. They just can't afford him.
No, I think he legitimately gets like 7.5 or 8 million over 7 years. I don't think there's a way. The Rangers, they don't even have a shot. They can't even get in the room. That's why the rumors were so strange. Whereas Malkin, I think he's pissed off and he's disgruntled with Pittsburgh. And I think you could see him take a 2 or 3 year deal at 6, 6.5. That's why I think it's a realistic possibility for Malkin. Whereas Kadri, like, there's no chance. It was never even going to be a thought for Chris Drury.
Yeah, but I'm also sure that Drury called about Kadri. I'm sure he's called all these guys. So an agent could take a call and then leak it and say, "Hey, Chris Drury called me," and then, you know, it takes on a life of its own too. I think that's a lot of what happens at this time of year.
Vince, we'd be remiss if we didn't at least talk about the last most impactful event on the NHL calendar, and that's the NHL draft. The New York Rangers weren't heavily involved, obviously. No one expected us to be after that first-round pick transferred over.
They did leave early in the seventh round. They left the empty table.
Yep. Well, you know, a good team needs less things at the draft. But your general vibe of how the Rangers did at the draft, I know at least from the people we know, there's a lot of love for the first two picks and a lot of what the hell are they doing for the rest of the draft.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair summary from what I've heard, and I'll plug my own podcast for this week. My guest is Chris Peters, who I think is one of the best prospect reporters out there. So I'm definitely going to dive into each of these individual guys with Chris on my episode. So New Ice City, everybody check it out. Okay. And then getting back to the guys. Yeah, I think the first two picks to me, even before I started asking around, just based on the own research that I had done and looking at how they fit, Sikora and McConnell Barker are interesting guys. Sikora at development camp today on Monday. I mean, these guys, I think you can tell they're all a little bit jittery, especially the guys that are there for the first time. But he was – and listen, everybody obviously tries hard and plays hard at these type of development camps. But he was hustling from drill to drill like his life depended on it. Like, this guy you could just see is a ball of energy. You can hear it when he talks. He just seems to have a lot of spunk about him. I had one person call him a forechecking machine. He just seems like he's going to be a really good energy guy who can play with speed, who can be physical, who can be in your face, who can forecheck, who can play that style that we saw the Avalanche have so much success with, and the style that we know the Rangers are aiming for with Gerard Gallant and Chris Drury, and those are the kind of players that they've been trying to acquire. I really think team speed is something that they've identified that they want to add more of. They don't feel like they quite have the foot speed to hang with a team like Colorado at this point. So Sikora, I think, helps with that. He definitely, from what I've heard, is more of a winger, but I did have one scout tell me that he wouldn't be shocked if maybe they give him some looks at center because he does have a little bit of experience there. But I think that made the McConnell Barker pick kind of make more sense afterwards, because I know a lot of people were up in arms that the Rangers didn't draft a center with their first pick, as they have for however many consecutive years, even though center is quite clearly the biggest organizational need both on the NHL roster and in their prospect pool. But McConnell Barker is a guy that multiple people told me a couple of years ago they thought was going to be a first-round pick. He ends up not having the most productive year in the OHL this past season, but I think it's hard to judge a lot of the OHL guys, especially the younger guys, because they completely lost a season due to COVID, and they haven't had any form of routine or regularity for a while. So he's the type of guy that maybe you could see pop this season in the OHL, and then all of a sudden he looks like a third-round steal for the Rangers. I got to see him in person for the first time today, especially at the rink for development camp. Big dude, like bigger than I expected. A lot of times you see these guys, and they're listed at like 6'1 or 6'2, but then you stand next to him, you're like, you're probably more like 5'11. But he was a pretty big dude who looked like he had some physical maturity already. So I think those two are really intriguing picks. The other guys later in the draft, those are guys that are longer shots, obviously. And I think with each one of them, you look at the skill sets, they all profile, especially the forwards, profile more like maybe bottom six, fourth line kind of guys. And I think from the Rangers' perspective, you know, they want guys like that in their system who might be able to plug holes on the fourth line or somewhere in the bottom six in the coming years on cheap entry-level contracts. So I don't think they were aiming huge upside with some of those picks, especially like, you know, a couple of the picks for guys that were draft eligible a few years ago and just didn't get picked, like the Mancini defenseman, and then Capri, the forward that they got in their final pick in the sixth round. So we'll see how those guys materialize. But my sense on everybody after the first two picks is that they're probably more like bottom of the roster type guys if they make it. So, you know, sometimes I guess from the Rangers perspective, you're going to roll the dice on guys like that, just hoping that they might be able to fill a role for you sometime in the future.
That's all you can ask, right? One of the final questions I have, or actually the final, if the Rangers sign Mott on Wednesday, which obviously they are interested in him, but they don't also want to let him get away. And as soon as free agency goes, we usually see all the deals get done pretty immediately in the NHL. There's nothing really that drags out. That automatically kind of takes them out of everything except that B-level center, right? Like a Stasny. So that would be a pretty big sign for everybody kind of following everything. If Mott signs, the only room left is like a Stasny or a Dylan Strome maybe at a cheap or something else.
Yeah, most likely, unless they find some kind of way to move more salary. But again, if you take out those big six guys that we talked about, the highly paid guys, who else are they moving that really represents a lot of salary?
There's nobody.
I mean, if they traded Hedl or Kako, assuming that Kako's salary is going to be right around the same range as Hedl, which is 2.3, then okay, you're taking a little more money off the books that way. So maybe that gives you a little more wiggle room. Like, they'd probably have to do something like that to fit a guy like Scheifele, for example, because I believe he's at 6.125. million. It's kind of sad that I know all these salaries off the top of my head, but I've been staring at a lot of these guys for a while. So they could maybe find a way via trade to squeeze somebody who costs a little bit more than a Stasny or a Strome or a Dylan Strome, I should say, might. But yeah, I mean, if they sign Mott, that should definitely tell you something about how much they have to potentially spend on a center. And I think that they're aiming high, but I also think that they have a lot of fallback options, which are a couple of the guys that we've mentioned on the show so far. So to me, I think the way I view it is Drury has like a board of all these different possibilities. And based on what happens with XYZ, then that might make so-and-so a more realistic possibility for him. So I think they have a lot of balls in the air right now, and they want to see what breaks. Maybe if a trade that they've been fishing on all of a sudden falls into place, or maybe if the free agent market shakes out a certain way where there's one guy left holding the bag and wondering where he's going to go, and they can swoop in and take advantage of that situation. So I think that's the way they're playing it. I do not sense that they have one guy who they're really, really zeroed in on right now. I think this is going to be interesting to see how it plays out. They have to come out of this with a center, but is it one of the big names that would get the fan base excited, or is it more of a practical choice that maybe allows them to re-sign a guy like Mott or do a couple other little things? It's all going to be little things, but maybe one or two other little things with the roster. Again, I'm going to harp on this point. I'm sure I'm going to end up writing about this after all the dust settles, but no matter what happens in the next week, it all comes down to the development of the kids. That is the path to a championship for this team. I don't see one move that happens in this week that all of a sudden.
Well, maybe you don't bench one in game six. That's all I'll say. So maybe you don't do that.
Yeah. I mean, listen, questionable move. But listen, your boy Kako, I think, handled it really well. I'll say that too. I'll give him some credit there, because I fished around on this a lot. I did not get any sense from really anybody that he was kicking and screaming about that or making it into a big thing. If anything, it seems like he's motivated to kind of shove it to them and show them that, you know, he should be in the lineup. But I don't think that is going to be a thing that makes him more likely to want to leave. So I'm curious to see how he reacts to a moment like that.
Me too. Actually, final question. Sorry to cut you off, Greg. Do you see Lafreniere actually getting on power play one next year, taking that Ryan Strome spot?
It depends who the center ends up being. I mean, if they end up with Scheifele or Dubois or Malkin or someone like that, then it probably decreases the chances. But ideally, I think they need to promote some of those guys. They need to give them more ice time. They need to give them more responsibility in all situations, which definitely includes the power play. They need to put those guys in a position where they are going to have to grow, where they're going to have to take on, you know, more responsibility and become bigger parts of the team, because that is what's necessary. That is what we're looking at right now. You drafted all those guys. You need to now promote them and see if they're going to sink or swim. And you would think, especially based on what we saw in the playoffs, especially with Hedl, Lafreniere, and Miller, I think those are probably the three young guys that stood out to me the most, that it looks like they're probably going to be able to swim. So moving forward, I think that's got to be a real point of emphasis for the Rangers, is letting those guys blossom.
Last one for me, Vince. I know the Ranger names today weren't all that surprising. I know you at least raised an eyebrow on Tyler Wahl, but I can't say any of us are totally heartbroken or upset about it. Was there anyone on the qualifying market today outside of Dylan Strome where you were like, huh, what's up with that?
Sonny Milano a little bit. I didn't really expect the Ducks to let him go. I don't know if he's a fit for the Rangers again, because I don't think he plays any center. I think he's exclusively a winger. So I don't know if he's a fit for the Rangers or a guy that I see them pursuing, but he was a guy that when I watched him play, I was impressed with the skill. And so I was a little surprised that the Ducks let him go. I want to take a closer look at the list, if I'm being honest with you guys. I was at the rink for a lot of the day. I raced out of there. I wrote my story. I went and picked up the baby from daycare. We made dinner, and then I came on with you guys. I've been shooting a few texts here and there. Yeah, I've been I did have a text exchange about Gauthier with somebody. Which is why I brought that up at the beginning. But I will take a closer look tonight. But I did see Sonny Milano, and that was a name that jumped out to me as a guy that I was a little surprised got let go. Listen, centers are the thing. They're gonna fish around on some of these centers and see if there might be a guy in that mix who they believe has some upside and they could take a low risk signing on. They're definitely gonna sign one or two guys, as they do every year, on two-way contracts, who they look at as guys who could either play for Hartford or in a pinch bounce up. You know, they've done that with guys like Greg McKegg and Dryden Hunt and Johnny Brodzinski. So I would look for them to probably sign one or two guys like that who they end up targeting. But yeah, the low cost option to me has become more realistic over the course of the last couple weeks. Just as you get more of a feel for exactly what this cap situation is and exactly the hurdles that they're dealing with, they might have to do something that isn't the sexiest thing out there, and they just look at it as a practical move.
Vince, thanks so much for joining us. We'll talk to you, I guess, like the end of September, probably again. That'll be the next time we have you back. And then if you haven't checked it out yet, do check out Vince's podcast, New Ice City. The ending episode before he restarted was like an hour, 20 minutes, Vince, of you kind of breaking down interview last day. And a lot of it's still relevant now. So if you haven't listened to it, it's quite the listen, a masterclass from you, Vince. So thanks for coming on, and appreciate all your advice and information.
Nice butt kissing at the end there, Ryan. I appreciate it.
I'll call you a shithead when I want to, but I think that was great work.
I'll even it out. Tell the people the disgusting piece of shit IPA you're currently drinking.
Well, actually, it is not an IPA. It's a summer ale. So it's like a little step under an IPA as far as the hoppiness and all that. But it's delicious. It's Brooklyn. It's a Brooklyn brewery.
I just bought my Oktoberfest tickets, so I'm very excited. Not for Germany version.
You guys are the only podcast that I will usually try to have a beer in my hand for.
Strange. I wonder why.
I want to make it clear, I'm not pre-gaming for the podcast, but
Vince,
I cracked my first beer and I drank it. Actually, it's actually just about done over the course of this podcast. So
easy peasy.
Works out nicely.
Thank you so much for taking the time. I know it's been a long day for you. Enjoy. Tell the family, say hello, including baby Vince, who's doing very well, I'm sure. And
since the season ended, like, we took him out of daycare for the most part, and it's been daddy daycare around here, and he's walking and now running. I basically just spend my days in between writing and checking in with sources. I'm just chasing him around.
What's the Green Heart scale? Is it good?
Have you made him a center yet? It sounds like you have a very clear path to how we get this kid paying for his own college.
A few people have asked me when he's going to get on skates, and we're working on swimming right now, which just feels like more of a summertime activity, but maybe come the winter, we'll see what's going on. But he is still, he walks really well and runs really well with no shoes on. Now what we're trying to progress to is the shoes on, and with the shoes on, he looks a little bit like a drunk guy walking down the street. So maybe once we master the shoes.
Honestly, Vince, same. I got to tell you.
Yeah, so once we master the shoes, we'll work on skates.
Awesome. Vince, we'll talk to you next time, bud. Talk to you soon. Later. All right, we're back. Just figured we'd do some quick five stars. We forgot to do them earlier. This is from Holmes. Who wins the cup first, the Rangers or Georgiev? Georgiev. It's next year. Congratulations.
Ah! I'm not sure.
Three-year deal if I were for Georgiou, by the way. Congrats to him.
The Mets didn't score a run in the first inning. Everything's miserable.
Yeah, that checks.
That checks. Yeah, I don't know. What the Avalanche are probably what, like 6-1, 7.5-1 right now to repeat as champion. The Rangers probably 16-1 ish.
Yeah, say that's about true.
I don't. It's tough. Let me put it this way: the only way Georgiev, I think, wins before the Rangers do is if the Avalanche repeat. I just don't. It's so hard to repeat. Unless there's really another hard COVID bubble, I just don't know if it's going to happen. The Avalanche will have better odds, but the juice would be more worth the squeeze on the Rangers. So take that.
David asks, can you react to the cap friendly page for the Flyers? It's laughable. I don't need to even click. I can just imagine.
I don't need the page. I need Rasmus Ristolainen and Tony DeAngelo is going to be a legitimate defensive pairing. I bet the over in Flyer games this year. It's going to hit a lot.
Ristolainen, that trade is woof, all timer. That is a bad one.
They extended him.
That's crazy. Sunk cost, my friends. It's worth it.
Oh my God. There are people in the NHL who just will never understand that Rasmus Ristolainen is bad. It's probably, I truly don't believe there is a Rasmus Ristolainen that exists in every other sport. I don't know what player keeps getting rewarded for being that bad. I just don't think it happens. Can you think of an NBA player?
Who's the guy in the Heat? But he's like a coach. Haslam?
Haslam doesn't count.
Okay.
Like Haslam, that's an off the court contract that for some reason they just let him be the 15th man. But I'm not talking with Ristolainen. It would have to be someone in the starting five, because this is a guy they give important minutes to.
Kendrick Perkins in Oklahoma City, maybe.
Someone stopped paying him though. I'm talking about a guy that's, okay, that's still true. Being paid today. Like if Ristolainen was happening, what Perkins was happening, we'd know about it. We'd laugh about it. But at least then not everybody was in on analytics like they are today. So I'm thinking we now have too much information to a certain extent in all sports. We are now smart enough where people like Rasmus Ristolainen aren't happening. I really can't name one.
It is baffling, isn't it? It's I'm trying to think of even NFL players. I'm there's some guys in the NFL, but even then they're utility guys, right? They're not starting.
I guess Matt Ryan. Right,
but Matt Ryan was in a Super Bowl, man. I know he sucks, but
the quarterback position is so different. It's not comparable to an NHL defenseman. For me, it has to be someone in a starting five in the NBA on a team that thinks they are good. And I just even Evan Fournier has had moments, man. And yeah, even Fournier, then, his contract's movable.
Oh God, he makes more than the entire Ranger team.
It's impossible.
This is from Jay Play. If the Rangers were to hypothetically trade Lindgren away and move Miller up to play with Fox, what effects do you think this would have on Fox play? Not saying they should, just curious on your thoughts.
None.
Yeah, Fox is really good. And Miller has the same more ability than Ryan Lindgren, but Lindgren just has the chemistry with Fox that's just developed over the year, and that matters more than we kind of give it credit for. On top of that though, Miller's just a fucking amazing player, and he has more speed than Lindgren does, more reach, and I like seeing them together. It's fun, but I don't think it would change. It wouldn't make Fox woo, another level. He's already that good.
Yeah, but it also wouldn't make Fox less of a player, which I think is what the question was actually
not
asking.
Making less of a player. No.
Yeah, does Ryan Lindgren's presence on that line help elevate Adam Fox's game? And I just think Adam Fox, he's just special. His level is independent of everybody. Lindgren's a great partner for him. Don't get me wrong. This isn't a slight on Lindgren at all. It's just if Lindgren wasn't there, I'd still expect greatness from Adam Fox. I'll tell you what. I think the player I'd actually be most curious about is see how Zach Jones's game transforms playing next to Jacob Trouba. And I think that would be a fascinating partnership. Because what's the one knock on Jones that 200 hockey
too small,
would tell
too
you.
Small,
he's
too
a little small,
small, too small, same height.
So you're gonna
and weight.
You're gonna you're gonna put him next to a fucking dump truck like Jacob Trouba, and allow him to do what things Zach Jones does that are special. Oh, I think that'd be super intriguing.
All right, we're out of here for this week. We're back next week. Love you guys. Follow us on Twitter, Orion Mead. Follow Greg at Blue Shirts Break. See you then. Bye. All right, you know, at the end of every show, I mispronounce names for over a minute. And today I'm going to thank the NHL Insiders Club for hanging out and supporting this podcast and getting some good scoops in the Insiders Club chat on Discord. Adam Cassidy, Adam Cohen, Adam Cartullo, Adam Keach, Alex Gardner, Anthony Terragata, Ben Waters, Ben Weber, Bill Rattel, Brett McGinnis, Brian Doyle, Brian Gallagher, Brian Mallon, Broadway Blucher Bleeder, Chris Finelli, Chris Haru, CJ Stellwagen, Conrad P. Damage, Daniel Dezen, David Naradin, David Siegel, Dennis Dykes, Darian, Eric Stagg, Garrett Reynes, Kim Gardner, Cup, Garrett Gressman could fly, damn it, god damn it, Ryan, Harrison Hasco, Hip Hip 89, Holosauce, Ian Rodriguez, Ian Usher, Jake B., James Masker, Jamie Filippone, Filippone? Riding my Filippone. Jerry Marquez, JD Mac, JD Frankie, JJ, John Hardison, John Chase, Johnny Thundercock, Jordan, Josh Kestenbaum, Justin Freeman, Christopher Florida, Christoph Berg, Leszek Gronkowski, I nailed it, Lou Giordano. Going to the next page, it's loading. Matthew Goodwin, Matthew Kine, Meatball the Cat, Mike Bucklaw, Neil Grover, Nicola, Steve Nicola, Pascal Barrier, Apple Coach Rev, Pro World of Text Gamer, Sean Taggart, Sean Manea, Steve Bullbach from also Norway, Swingard, Thomas Welsh, Tom Sequeri, Tom Ertz Jr., Tommy O'Neill, Turf from Manhattan, Upstate Vin, Vinny Bronco, Vinny Hay, Will Specter, and Winston, the Golden Retriever. I thought this episode rocked, dude. Seriously did, bro. Vince is the best. Seriously, I know I kissed his ass a little bit during the interview, but just the best in the biz right now. Crushing the game. Hope you guys learned a lot. I think the big telling thing at the end of the interview, we talked about Tyler Mott signing. I think if Tyler Mott signs with the Rangers early on Wednesday, takes him out of a lot of action, including Malkin. I think the Kane thing is totally fake. I have all year. I have last year, too, by the way. Don't get it. And we'll stay tuned. We got BSBOT later this week. We'll be talking on, I think, Wednesday afternoon. Cover some free agency stuff right away. Should be a good old grand old time. Talk to you guys then. Love you. Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.